Right, this is Pure Decking for February the 23rd, 1985. This is the show about stuff that interests me. I'm Morps. Tonight we have Sard, Suave, and Analog. What's up, guys?
Hey, how's it going?
Yo.
And we actually don't know where Sard is. We assume he's here. He's left the call up. So there's a good chance he's actually being attacked by zombies right now and just, you know, don't know it. So, and apparently I'm not used to the new placement of the controller. I rebuilt my studio recently and I moved where my little control panel for the soundboard is, so that's why I kept bumping the scratch wheel. Because I don't actually know how to scratch. I have the wheels I like to pretend, but I don't really know what I'm doing. So,
poser.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Everybody, this guy's a phony.
So, anyways. Moving in, we got some feedback here. This was interesting. And we've talked about this before, actually, on the show. But since we got the feedback, I thought we'd address it. It's from Psychros. He said he wasn't really sure if it was an issue or not, and he was kind of hoping we ignored the issue. But the Mario game clip, and he didn't say it, but I'm sure the Pac-Man game clip and the Price is Right clip, you know, this thing. He's saying is probably protected by copyright, and we probably shouldn't be using it. And, you know, he's right. They are protected by copyright. I did some checking, and pretty much this is a gray area. Gray area. There's not a lot out there on whether or not you can do this. Now, if you go to Nintendo, and you know, I went to Nintendo because the Mario clip was the one in question here. You know, they have on their legal page, nintendo.com/corp/legal.jsp, there are several different types of copyright which are associated with Nintendo's products. These include various copyrights in Nintendo's software source code, executable code, game visual display, you know, that would be the sprites and the pixels, game music, and I'm guessing that would include sound effects, characters, product packaging, blah, 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 blah. And the rest of the page on their legal is pretty much about Nintendo ROMs and why they're bad. So, yeah,
ROMs are bad. Okay,
ROMs are bad. Emulators are bad. They're put together by bad people, and even thinking about copyrighting a game is just horrible. you know, so of course, you know, they're going to claim, no, you can't do anything with it. It's our property. Don't touch it. And they even have in the FAQ, it's like, but the games are out of release and they're old. I mean, when did the NES come out? What was that, like 1985?
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
84, wow. 85, something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing's old. It's just a few years shy of being 30 years old. But, of course, they still make new Mario games, so I guess that's I think that's the point they're trying to get across, is that they still make they want you to go buy the new games, not play the old ones. But the closest thing I could find to us using these sound clips. Well, one, there's news, which you could make a fairly decent argument that Pure Decking is a news show because we cover news stories and talk about it.
Oh, absolutely.
And news is pretty much allowed to use most of any of this stuff because they're just reporting.
Right.
The other thing that's close to what we're doing from a legal standpoint is sampling. Now, when I'm talking about sampling, that's when you've got electronic music artists who are taking clips and bits and pieces out of movies and quotes and stuff like that and using it to, you know, make music or putting them in their songs. And there is, like, no clear answer on whether or not sampling is legal or not. I did find a page on it from nolo.com that was talking about sampling. And they had a whole bunch of stuff in there pretty much saying it's generally a good idea to get permission from the original author if you can, or alter it to the point that you can't tell where it came from. The other thing is, you know, make sure it's covered under fair use. And I'm actually pretty sure that our sound clips are covered under fair use, because the three things that they said generally are used when you're trying to determine fair use is, did you take a substantial amount of the original work, which I didn't link it here, but when I was Googling, apparently there was a court case where they said 3 seconds out of a song was a substantial amount. So, which I guess if you got a recognizable part of the chorus or the beat line or something, that could be true.
Fair enough.
You know, did you do something with it? Did you transform it in some way? And then the last one, did you cause significant financial harm to the original copyright owner? Now, I think points one and three there are kind of enough of an argument that we're doing fair use. I think it's okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, one, I don't think anybody's going to call us on it. If you want to be really real. I mean, other than Psychro sending us the letter. But I don't think we're going to get a letter from Nintendo saying, stop using the Mario Game Over sound from, you know, our game that's 30 years old. So, and if we do, I'll read it on air and honor it. But if we don't, you know. But
I'm not gonna.
I mean.
And who's to say what significant financial harm is anyways? We don't make any money off of this, so.
No.
That's all it's interpretation anyways. Don't.
I thought about putting some Google ads up on the page to kind of offset the hosting costs, but I haven't, you know, everything you read about that is just scary. It's like, oh, yeah, no, you'll make tons of money for them, and they'll give you, like, a dollar. It's like, it's like, yeah, why don't you keep the dollar, and I'll keep my integrity. But what integrity we have. But I'm pretty sure what we're doing falls under fair use. I mean, we're... It's almost, you know, the video game sound clips are almost paying homage to them anyways.
Absolutely.
I mean,
oh yeah, it's free publicity for them.
So I'm short version is I probably am going to start phasing them out just because I'd rather make some of our own clips, and I think we've got enough content now to do that. But I'm not going to just stop using them because I think we can't. Now, that obviously doesn't apply to the music on Galaxy 15. We obviously only want open licensed music on G15 because we're playing full songs. And that's a different argument that we're trying to make. But in the shows, these little noise clips, you know, stuff like, what am I looking for? One of them. This. I don't think anybody, you know, we're paying homage to the video game culture and the people who grew up playing this stuff. That's why I'm using them. So, I think it's okay. Now that we've covered that long and arduous feedback, let's get into current events. So it just got really quiet. Did I lose a call?
No, I'm here.
Nope.
No, I just muted myself.
Oh, okay. Yep. Well,
same here.
I got used to it there, so okay. Current event. This one's actually from Adobe. As discussed in the just-released Adobe Roadmap for the Flash Runtimes, Adobe has begun working closely with Google to develop a... I'm reading Adobe's direct press release here, by the way. With Google to develop a single modern API for hosting plugins within the browser, one which could replace the current Netscape plugin API used by the Flash player. The PP API, codenamed Pepper, aims to provide a layer between the plugin and the browser that abstracts away differences between browser and operating system implementations. So in other words, this Pepper API is supposed to be cross-platform. Because of this work, Adobe has been able to partner with Google in providing a Pepper implementation of the Flash player for all 64 and x86 and 64-bit platforms supported by the Google Chrome browser. Google will begin distributing this new Pepper-based Flash player as part of Chrome on all platforms, including Linux, later this year. For Flash player releases after 11.2, the Flash player browser plugin for Linux will only be available via the Pepper API as part of Google Chrome, and will no longer be available as a direct download from Adobe. Adobe will continue to provide security updates for non-Pepper distributions of Flash 11.2 on Linux for 5 years after its release. So they're going to do security fixes, but Flash 12, no. Flash Player will continue to support browsers using non-Pepper API on platforms other than Linux. We will be providing a debug player implementation for the Flash on Linux, blah, 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 blah. Essentially, Adobe has just said if you want Flash on Linux, you have to use Chrome.
For now, anyways, right? I mean,
that's the current press release.
Yeah.
Until somebody, until either another browser makes either a wrapper for Pepper or Mozilla implements it.
Right. Hmm.
Which Mozilla is not interested in implementing it. They've got their own.
Yeah, and see, that's like I'm kind of torn a little bit because of that. Because Linux and Flash, especially, like I remember the latest update that came out, it was all over the freaking blogs because it was the first one in like 2 years or something like this. Yeah. So obviously, it's bad that they're going to kind of capture and centralize it around Chrome. But the other part of my mind says, hey, this is actually good because they've made it.
At least
you know,
it'll get updates.
Exactly. At least it'll get updates and it will get attention and it won't be 5 years till the next update.
But the part about this I don't like is you are essentially locked into Chrome or Chromium. And there are a lot of privacy concerns on Chrome. And there are a lot of Linux distributions out there that won't use Chrome because they're using like Dilo or Lynx or something because they're such a lightweight distribution, they don't have room for it.
Right, but I mean, you can. I kind of see this as a evolutionary step. I mean, so they start off with Chrome, and they start on. You know, they. It's just like any old hardware. You know, you stop supporting the old stuff. So they do this. Obviously, if you want the new Flash, then you have to upgrade or go to Chrome. It's going to create demand for Mozilla, Firefox, and all those other browsers to use its API.
That's true.
It's going to force them to upgrade. And like I said, in my mind, it's better at least that it gets attention than, you know, attention every 5 years or whatever it is.
Yeah, I just, you know, I mean, I use both browsers, so I'm not going to say I don't use Chrome. But and there's Chromium. I mean, of course, it's you know, they've got the open source component, so you can, I'm sure you can go into Chromium and strip out all the stuff that, you know, scares you about, you know, everything you type in being sent up to Google, for example. But I don't know. I just see this as a very limiting move because you're going to be locking down the Linux desktop more and more and more for regular users. Just, you know, on top of what Ubuntu is doing and all the touchscreen interfaces that everyone's putting together for machines that aren't touchscreen based. So I have concerns with this.
You know, it kind of goes against everything that Linux stands for. You know, Linux is all about customization and everything like that, and this is the exact opposite.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This is, you get no choice. If you want Flash, you use Chrome.
For now. That's my point.
Yeah, I know. That's a fair point.
You create the demand, and other people convert over. I think it's cool that they're making it, obviously, platform independent, which is great. I mean, more shit should go like that. Why do I have to run Windows in order to run all these different applications?
Fair enough. I just, as somebody who uses Linux every day, that kind of ticks me off because it's like most of my Linux boxes don't have Chrome on them. They've got Firefox. And Chrome isn't even in most of the repos. So I'm going to have to actually go to Google's page and download it onto whatever machine I'm using.
Right.
So it feels like limiting choice and I don't like it. We fear change.
Yeah, like I said, dude, it's an evolutionary step in my mind.
Out with
the old and with the new.
Yeah, I don't see it that way, but okay. Next one up, this is from Ubuntu Vibes. Code Hero, this is awesome. Code Hero is a co-op first-person shooter where you become a rockstar programmer saving the world from evil AI. You and your trusty code gun that can copy-paste and edit real JavaScript is an ammunition to blast the enemy, manipulate the world, and build structures creatively.
Freaking sweet.
Code Hero gives... I'm trying so hard not to burst out laughing because it's such a fun concept, but at the same time, nobody's going to play it. Code Hero gives players unprecedented power inside the game. It's a new type of learning. Players start out using powerful code without needing to understand it, and then slowly master that code to conquer specific challenges. It's a game first and a learning tool second. Code Hero is currently on Kickstarter and has already raised its 100K goal to begin. Okay, and those who pledge get beta access to the game. And they've got a video, if you go to the page, of it. And you are popping open this interface, and it's a window. And it's a, you know, color-coded IDE window, and you punch in JavaScript, and then you shoot something with the JavaScript, and it like moves things around in the world or changes their size, or and it's just like, on one hand, it's kind of a crazy concept for a game. On another hand, a lot of people are going to learn JavaScript playing this thing.
Yeah, that's freaking crazy, man.
That's certainly better than Guitar Hero, where you learn to press buttons as opposed to actually playing a guitar, because it takes about as much time to learn how to play both of them.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
that's hilarious. Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, I think it's a great idea.
I love it.
You know, I kind of question whether it actually will teach you how to code very well. But
In the video on the site, mm-hmm. I could definitely see where they were trying to teach you aspects of code. Now, you're not going to understand what all of you're doing, and of course you're manipulating game objects, so there's going to have to be kind of a tutorial, you know, okay, now that you've played the game, here's how you take it to the next step kind of thing.
Right.
But
at least it's a cool, new, different concept.
It's certainly something, isn't it?
Yeah, that is cool. I just watched a video, man. That definitely looks interesting.
Yeah.
I'll be looking for that when it comes out.
They've got the avatar of Ada Lovelace going around teaching you how to program, which is just hilarious. And nobody else knows who Ada Lovelace is.
Sorry, dude. No.
Look it up. You should know that. Especially if you're in the IT field. You should know that. Moving on. This one's from Gizmodo. Thank you, Analog, for sending it to me. A briefcase detailing joint French and military drone information was stolen in Paris. The briefcase in question, belonging to an executive from major French military contractor Danassault, French for the assault, was packed with documents marked defense confidential, the Telegraph reports. And how did... Yeah, it's from Gizmodo. I hate their writing. And how did so much precious intel detailing how a major defense initiative between two world powers get nicked? Some dude walked away with it. Really, the BBC says the briefcase was stolen when a senior Dassault aviation official buying a Eurostar rail ticket went to the help of a colleague who had been bothered by a young man. When the official returned to retrieve his case, it had disappeared. Correct. He walked away to deal with a young man, leaving briefcase behind. The briefcase filled with documents marked defense and confidential. Although the cops allegedly calling it a random crime, what are the odds that... Okay. So, this French assault, you know, this French military contractor just lost a whole bunch of French and UK military drone documents by leaving a briefcase in a train station.
That's what happened.
No.
Yeah.
He put him through the shredder. I mean, come on. He's just covering it up.
Yeah, he sold him to somebody.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't. I mean, yeah, it wasn't an accident. Random crime, my ass.
Yeah, no shit. You know, I've watched movies. They use the whole handcuff briefcase thing. If it's that important.
Yeah. Well, and if they didn't do that, then he's a fucking idiot.
What are you talking about? They just put it on a flash drive now.
Yeah, that's the truth.
That too.
So, all right, this last one's from Gizmodo and also was sent to me by Analog. So, this one is hilarious. A years-old coding error has exposed the emails and passwords of over a million smut-loving chat users from YouPorn. The YouPorn site itself wasn't hacked, but rather its associated sex chat site, which almost should have given this one to Syntax, which is run by an outside company, somehow left bales of unencrypted sign-up information on a public web server. The error was apparently discovered after the sensitive info was uploaded to an FTP server and made available in torrent form. The torrent has been reportedly removed from circulation. Bullshit. Though one can still find the indexes in some of the older files on archive.org. The breach itself was noticed through a discussion thread on flashback.org. Looking at the data, it seems like a careless programmer accidentally left debug logging onto a publicly accessible URL as early as November 2007 and has been storing all registrations ever since. So, we know a few people who are scrambling to go change their passwords.
That's Did you change funny. Yours yet, Forbes?
I don't have a YouPorn account.
Oh, that's not what I saw last time. Okay.
No, it wasn't. That was RedTube. That was something different.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I'm going to have to rocket to know right past that one. Analog, you just totally derailed me.
Yes, I win.
Congratulations, you won.
Oh, my real God. Question behind this is, you know, why would you have, you know, an account to porn sites anymore? It is so freely available.
That's what I was thinking. Even then, I mean, I bet you half these accounts, at least the email addresses are associated with them, are asdf@asdf.com.
You know, notme.com, shit like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
You know, twiddling on the number pad for a password, probably. But, you know, then again, too, George Carlin said it best. Think about how smart the average person is and realize half the fucking people out there are stupider than that. So...
It's a very good
point. Very true.
Obviously, this was their little nest egg. And they were waiting until, you know, they were in financial trouble and was like, shit, we need some money, like, quick. Okay, go find this database. Go sell off all those email addresses. Rake in some easy cash.
Yeah. So, anyways, I don't know. I mean, I like how the really funny part about the story is they didn't realize it was happening until they saw the data floating around on the internet. Oops.
Yeah, it's a little late then.
Yeah, that's the attack's over. You're already done. You just don't know it yet. So, but anyways, we're gonna go right along. And you know, when I first started doing the Tuesday Thursday schedule, the idea was the Thursday show we'd be a lot more tech heavy. So we're gonna try to do that.
Me love you long time.
So we're moving into Digital Dojo much earlier than we usually do during the shows. And first thing I want to talk about, I got a new toy. It's actually very old. Get it over here. This is I don't know how well the mic's picking up the noise from it, a NEC Mobile Pro 780, which, if you know what that is, that's a Windows CE, like Windows CE 3 device. It's one of these pre-netbook PDAs that they tried to make look like a laptop. So it's got like a half of a VGA screen.
Huh.
And
so it's not just like a regular Palm PC, Windows CE piece of shit carry around PDA type thing.
No. Go, you don't remember those Palm Top PCs that were real big back around 2000?
They're not coming to mind right now. I'll go look it up though.
Yeah, go Google that real quick or, a similar product was the HP Journala. Yeah, RU's messaging me, why'd you use the old soundbite? Because the new one wasn't very good, and I haven't made a better one yet. So, we're... But we didn't all make bad kung fu sounds. So... But, anyways, what this is... This is a sub-laptop. It's ancient. I got it for $30 on eBay plus shipping, and I will admit that I wasn't paying attention on the shipping and got gypped, but
bummer.
Yeah,
when that happens,
I paid $20 for shipping, and they used one of those post office express boxes that are like $5. It's just kind of like, you ass.
Yeah,
but you know, really, if you're buying anything on eBay, you should really know to check the shipping cost.
You should, and like I said, I just wasn't paying attention and didn't even think about it. Now the reason I got.
Yeah. There we go.
Yep. So, but the really, really funny part about this, the reason I got it is I wanted one so bad back in high school. It wasn't even funny. Of course, back in high school, these things cost as much as a real laptop, so why would you ever buy one, right? But, you know, yeah, this, I got it on eBay. It was $30 plus, you know, I paid too much in shipping. But it's essentially, it's got a PCMCI slot and a compact flash slot. Well, luckily, I've got enough old crap kicking around that I can get Wi-Fi on this thing, get some decent storage on it, and I'm essentially going to be using it as a SSH terminal and just keep notes on in meetings. But
that's cool.
I'm gonna rip it apart, and I'm going to restore it because I don't know how well the mic's picking up. It's actually got parts rattling around inside of it, but it works. I mean, it works fine. So,
you know, the first thing I thought of when I saw this, I'm looking at one now, a freaking... we're driving a little handheld terminal, dude, if you get Wi-Fi on that thing.
Oh, yeah, I've got a Cisco, what is this thing? Cisco AeroNet 350 that's supposed to work on it. But
yeah,
I have
exactly.
To install the drivers, you've got to get ActiveSync up and going. And good God, ActiveSync. If anybody's ever used the old pocket PCs, you know what a pain in the butt that thing is.
Yeah.
The problem is, I can't find my USB to serial adapter, so I haven't hooked it up yet.
No, that would be freaking cool just for war driving, walking around.
Well, that
and finding just APs and, or like you said, yeah, using it as just a regular little terminal. Well,
the other fun thing is there is a Linux distribution for it and a port of OpenBSD.
Nice.
So I'm going to be experimenting with alternative operating systems on it. I'm also just going to get the Windows CE up and useful. But, you know, it's got a, the keyboard on it's comparable to most netbooks. Honestly, I can type on it just fine.
Yeah, it looks like it. That's pretty freaking cool. I've never heard of these, but that's actually really neat.
Yeah. So I can't believe you've never heard of these things. These were like, I mean, I don't know, maybe I've just been a geek that long, but it's they're great. It's going to be a lot of fun to see what I can get this thing to do. I might even make a G15 video series out of restoring it, because I'm going to tear the whole thing down and get some compound filler and paint it.
Sweet.
So
we'll see. That'd be cool. That'd be interesting to watch.
Tighten it up, see what I can do with it about restoring it. So,
yeah.
Okay, and moving on to the big topic I kind of planned for this evening. I thought we could talk a little bit about our studio setups, because I just got recently got done redoing mine. And Tuesday's show, we tried an experiment trying a very, very different way of doing the audio path, and it didn't work at all.
You know, I listened to that recording today, and it didn't sound that bad to me.
Well, it wasn't anywhere near as good as our recordings usually are.
Yeah, I noticed a little distortion, but it's definitely still listenable.
Okay, well, I listened to bits and pieces of it, but what was coming in my headphones was really different than what I was used to. So, but talking about this, the actual studio setup here a little bit. First up, the disclaimer. I know almost nothing about professional studio setups. Anyone who knows that, who knows me, be like, yes, that's correct, if they've seen some of the rigs I've tried.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So, I like that analog. It's like, yes.
Sorry.
No, I fully admit it. Everything I figured out on this has been by experimentation, and hooking it up, and seeing what happens, and wasting money. So...
That's how we learn. That's how I do most of the stuff I do.
Yeah. So I've got quite a bit of extra, you know, well, some extra equipment kicking around now that I probably really don't need, but whatever. So, anyways, one of the biggest things I had to get over in setting up the studio was getting over the concept that my machines were going to be used for anything other than the station, like dedicating a box to it full time for broadcast, dedicating, an audio setup so that, because for the longest time I was flipping sound cards and turning things on and off and having to, you know, adjust my audio levels every time we did a show, and it got to be such a pain in the butt, and you know, our audio quality was hurting for it. I had to get over that and just say, okay, these machines are the studio, period, and not use them for much else. I mean, sure, I can pull up a web browser on them, you know, iTunes, that kind of thing, but gaming, changing the audio rig around, doing other stuff with it, no. Go use another machine for that.
So. Right, and we usually, like you said, once you get dedicated and serious about it, sometimes it's easier to do that, just because I've had similar setups. I mean, there's something about leaving a computer on all the time that you have to get over, or at least get used to. A lot of people can't deal with the fans in them and all that. But
leaving them on all the time doesn't bother me, but leaving a machine dedicated to that specific task of, you know, being our broadcast box,
yeah,
that's odd. I mean, I've done file servers, I've done other stuff, but it's like that's stuff that like I'm using constantly and can easily explain to myself why I'm setting up a machine and dedicating it to that task. Whereas sure. This broadcast box, it's, you know, even though it's not that great of a piece of hardware, it's an old Celeron, it's still a good piece of kit. I mean, I could be doing a lot of other things with it, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, I had to get over the concept of dedicating hardware to it and not screwing with the audio setup every time because I wanted to use my headset and play some games.
Right.
You know? So, anyways, the actual theory, the operating theory of how this is supposed to work is we've got all these audio sources, which are primarily microphones, but in my case, I've also got the soundboard. And we've got to get all of the sound mixed and then pumped onto the broadcast box for recording and broadcast, right? And we've got to somehow, everyone's in different locations. You know, Suave is in Canada, Sard's on the moon. I don't really know where Analog is anymore. So
just out there.
Just, yeah, he's just kind of floating out there. Mm-hmm. And we have tried so many different ways of doing this. We used to use Second Life, which kind of worked, kind of. We've used Mumble, which actually worked really well, but we had such a hard time getting people into it that it worked well once you got it set up, but
yeah,
we had so many problems getting people set up and continuous problems. Like, I think, I don't know that Sard ever got yours working right.
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to say, as far as ease of access and use, Second Life was by far the best. It's just, you know, Skype audio sucks. So
the thing I hated about Second Life, though, is it because it's based on either where your avatar is or what the camera position is, how the sound comes into your speakers. There are times where I was doing like the IHN show where I'd be constantly digging with the camera movement and all that to try and get it to where I could actually hear everyone talking.
Oh, it was a real science to do podcasts in Second Life. I tell you what, it was well, I mean, we had it down, but even then, you go back and listen to some of those old recordings. They're a mess.
Fair enough. I never said it was good audio. I was just saying it was easy access.
I don't know. I think Skype's probably been the easiest to get people into.
Yeah, but like, you know, in Second Life, we would have random people who would walk by and take part in the show. And, you know, that's not really possible with something like Skype.
Yeah, I agree. I do kind of miss that part.
Well, we might be able to rig something up like that again. We'd have to, either me or somebody else would have to get a second mixer, and we'd have to do a transport between Skype and Second Life. And I've been looking at other audio transports besides Skype because I was having a lot of problems with it here recently. I think I've got that all sorted out now. Part of it was my fault for misunderstanding how to wire something on my mixer, which when I told Analog about, he was just laughing at me. I had I saw a 3-prong connector on the aux out jack on my mixer, so I naturally assumed that's stereo because that's what it always is. That's what it is on my headphones, right? That's a stereo jack. No, that's a balanced jack. And apparently, when you plug it, take a balanced jack and plug it into stereo, you screw shit up. So I figured that one out. But anyways, what we're doing is actually kind of what you would call multi-stage mixing. And that's because you've got Skype is playing mixer for everyone who's not at my house, essentially. And then their output is mixed with my microphone and the soundboard in, I've got a little Yamaha mixer here. And now the big part about this mixer is it has an aux channel. And I was just talking about that a second ago. What the guys on the call here is not the final mix. What's going to the broadcast box for recording is mildly different. For one, it's cleaner, at least on my microphone and the soundboard, which is where the music is played, so that's kind of important that it's clean. Because I'm actually running an audio line straight from the stereo out on the mixer into the sound card on the broadcast box, and I've got a fairly nice sound card in there. And what the guys on the call are hearing is actually the aux channel. And that's so I can do what's called a mix minus. And that's where they hear everything on the mixer with the exception of themselves. And then I listen to the final mix in my headphones. I'm not sure if I explained that very well. You guys able to follow that all right?
Yeah.
Someone, I think so.
Okay. It does involve multiple sound cards in my main machine because my main laptop is also the soundboard. So I've got a second USB audio interface that I'm running some DJ software through. And that's also going into the mixer and getting that thing tuned so I wasn't blowing out the guys on the call was a chore. But so the pipeline here is we've got the output from Skype, which is effectively a mixer, going into my mixer. We got the soundboard going into the mixer. And we got my microphone going into the mixer. We've got the auxiliary channel, or sometimes it's called the FX send channel on a mixer. That's what it was on my old one. That's going into Skype, and that's what they hear. That way I can turn down the knob on their channel. That way they don't hear themselves, because that would be a horrible... Anybody who's ever tried to do voice comms in a game and they get that echo off somebody, you know, where it's like 2 or 3 seconds after they say it, can you imagine trying to do a show with that kind of echo coming back at you through your headphones the whole time?
Yeah, that would suck.
I know people who can do it, but I sure can't. So...
Very distracting.
Oh, yeah. And so the tape out on my mixer goes to our broadcast box, and our broadcast box sends it out to the stream and also just runs Audacity, and I just click record in there. And then I've got some filters I run on the recording just to kind of level everything out. So let's see. What we tried to do on Tuesday was a little different. Tuesday, we tried to use Skype as the only mixer. The idea I had was if I could reduce the number of sound cards in play, we could clean up the audio a little bit, make it easier to on everyone to handle. And instead, I was using virtual audio cable on another machine for the soundboard. And I've got a Skype account set up on the broadcast box, and which is what, or like when BSV does his shows, or when Between the Sheets goes, if I'm not around, they can use that Skype account to get in and broadcast the show. That's how they do shows when I'm not around. And so the idea was I could run 3 Skype clients on my studio setup here and let Skype handle all the mixing and all the audio transport and just get some of this extra equipment out of the mix and try to simplify the whole thing. Well, the problem was it sounded like crap. And it's probably a combination of I don't really have enough bandwidth to run 3 Skype calls like that. And and the stream. And 2, I probably didn't tweak it enough to really get it going, because I kind of set it up when we went with the show, and then it was like, oh, crap. So.
Oh, well. Yeah. Well, except it wasn't that bad. Well, that's cool.
So, anyway, some of the stuff I'm looking at in the future... I've got a couple of different things here we were looking at. One of them is called LCON, or L-I-CON, L-L-C-O-N. And that is actually a audio transport that's meant for people doing remote jam sessions, like if you've got a band and they're geographically dispersed. You know, they can all hook up their computers, connect up to a central server with this thing, very much like Skype, but it's supposed to have less delay.
Huh, cool.
And so that was something I was looking at, trying to see if I could find a cleaner way to do it. The other thing I was looking at is a DAW called Reaper, because it has native support for something they call NinjaJam, or Ninjam, I think I'm saying that right. And Ninjam is similar to that LCON, which is also meant for remote jamming, but it's a lot more like Skype in that it's a peer-to-peer connection. And it also sucks up a lot of bandwidth. So, but I was kind of hoping that would let me get everyone in as a separate channel, which would make it a lot easier to balance calls out before the show. Because you could kind of do that in Second Life. Now, you didn't get individual channels from people when you were recording it, but you could actually go in and adjust each individual person's volume level. Actually, we got some more feedback from Cykros earlier, who was suggesting maybe we ought to look at TeamSpeaker Ventrilo. And we did try Mumble. I think the problem with TeamSpeak was the quality just wasn't there. I don't remember if we've ever tried Ventrilo for any of the shows or not.
Well, that's easy enough to set up. I've actually ran that in the past.
Oh,
that's...
I've used it before, too, just for like World of Warcraft and shit.
Yeah, for gaming. So,
you know, setting up a TeamSpeak or Ventrilo server, that would definitely make it a lot easier for people to hop into a call. Similar to SL, like really you just got to give them a link.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
that's true.
You know, they can't exactly join in on the show easily enough unless we do a call-in show. But, I mean, right. It's easy enough to listen to the show. You just go on the webpage and hit play. So that webpage had a lot of work put into it, so you could just, you know, go on there and click play. I don't know about you guys, but I put a lot of work on
it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's handy as hell, man. So it makes it real easy, just like you said.
So... Anyways, I don't know. Did you guys have anything else you wanted to add on the studio setups before I go into this last thing, which is just fun?
Nope. I was going to say, I think most of the rest of us are just using regular computers, regular headsets and mics and varying different qualities.
I got to say, I've gone through a number of different headsets. You know, I've had, you know, standard 3.5 millimeter jack headsets. I've had USB headsets. You know, they all work okay. I went out to Radio Shack and I bought a $30 condenser microphone. I believe it was a condenser microphone, Morps? You'd probably know.
There's condensers, and then there's dynamics, and then there's the little tiny ones which are in your headset, which are also a dynamic.
Okay, yeah, I think it's a condenser. You know, it looks like the sort of microphone you'd see on a movie or on a
that,
stage.
That doesn't necessarily mean it's a condenser, actually.
Oh, okay.
Those can be dynamic or condensers.
Fair enough. Anyways, bought a $30 one, and it orders of magnitude better quality on my voice, I've found.
Yeah. Well, we can actually, you know, we're actually hearing the fan noise from your room right now, which makes me think it's a dynamic.
Probably.
Condenser mics are a lot more focused. Again, I don't really know that much about this. I've just done a lot of reading on here lately, and like I'm pretty sure the Shure mic I have here is a dynamic, and I found it that those are better about background noise. I think one of my problems with that Behringer mic I was using was that it picked up a lot of background noise. So it might be a dynamic. I'd have to double check, but there's a lot of electrical differences, and I'm sure there's music freaks out there just flipping the fuck out with my horrible explanation of those. But just the size of the element, even in dynamic mics, makes a huge difference.
Right.
So how do you have that mic rigged up? I mean, did it have XLR, or did it just come out to a fourth-inch jack? Or
yeah, just a quarter-inch jack. And I excuse me, I'm just using my onboard sound card. And I went and picked up a quarter-inch to 3.5-millimeter converter.
I got you. So you've just got the... Yeah.
Just a little adapter that goes onto the end of the plug. So it's like the most low-tech, cheapest bargain bin approach that you can get.
Well, it's still better than your headset.
Yeah. Yeah, much better. In fact, it's better than any of the headsets I've used in the past. Now, I've got a shitty sound card, so I'm sure that had something to do with it. But still.
Well, okay. Sard, what are you using? Because I know you were looking at a mixer at one point.
Yeah, no, I'm actually using a USB headset. Okay. I think it was a $50 one. I upgraded from the shitty $20 one that I got, but
you know those shitty headsets.
Magnitude's order.
The little $5 to $10 ones. Sometimes you really luck out with those and get one that's got a great microphone in it.
Yeah,
because they're so cheap, they're not really checking them for quality. So usually they're an average mic, but sometimes you get a really good one. I don't know, Analog. Are you using that USB mic, or are you using?
I've been using the a headset mic, but I'm actually having problems with it as we speak. My actual headphones part is shorting out, so
nice.
I'm probably going to be switching over to that.
Lovely.
Yeah, I have to hold my head in a certain position.
Hold your mouth right.
Yeah, right. I mean, I have to if I turn my head just 2 degrees, yep, there went the headphones.
Oh, damn.
Awesome.
Lovely. Well, the last thing we got is just fun. And we'll close out on this. This is runforyourlives.com. And the description from their website, this is a zombie-infested 5K obstacle course race. And if you go on their website and check it out, it's a 5-kilometer race. And the next one's in Atlanta in a couple of weeks. And I wish I could go, but I don't have enough time. I may try to make it to the Indy one. And yeah, it's you're doing an obstacle course, a racing obstacle course, and they've got people done up as zombies. And if you go on the FAQ, they've actually got professional makeup artists there to do up the zombies. And it's, you know, see who can get through the obstacle course first without getting bit.
That's freaking awesome. And I was looking, Fox sent me that earlier, and I was looking at it. Dude, it looks like a ton of fun, even though it is 5K.
Yeah, I've been trying to exercise. So that would be good inspiration to say, no, you better freaking run or the zombies are going to get your ass. So,
right.
And it just looks like a an absolute blast. I mean, they've got in the FAQs, you know, please don't bring weapons. Your only weapons are your ability to run.
And I didn't think about that. That's probably a realistic threat that they have or concern.
Well, oh, yeah. You can just imagine some guy who didn't get the memo and shows up with a real samurai sword or something like that.
It's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to take care of these effing zombies. Check me out doing my race with a shotgun. Of course, you know, the other thing to consider, there is the old bear tactic of... You have to keep in mind, there's a lot of other people running this race, so the zombies are going to go for the slow ones first. So, Analog, I propose you and I get Madman to go with us, and we go to the indie one.
And, I can first shove Madman, then I can shove you.
I don't know.
I shall get away.
I don't know. I've been getting pretty quick here lately.
Suddenly, this race I wonder
took on a much darker tone, didn't it?
Exactly. I wonder how many friendships this race has ruined. You fucker, you tripped me. Oh, God. Well, why would you do that?
Skimming through it, it looks like if the zombies catch you, you get to become a zombie. So I don't know. But I'm just thinking, you know, if they get you, do you get to be a zombie and then go after them?
That's awesome. Even better.
So, I don't know. I haven't fully read the website, but it looks great. And I love the concept of, yep, you're going to run a race. And here's your motivation. So, anyways, that's all I've really got for Pure Decking tonight. So, let's see. Analog posted a movie. We'll watch that after the show. Listen to the stream. We've been updating it. Sard's put some new music on lately. I heard some of that on the stream earlier today. What have you added?
I actually added probably, it was over 100 songs or so from the various sources. Thank you to everyone that gave me feedback on where to find some good Creative Commons stuff. A lot of it came from dig.ccmixter. Some other websites, I can't remember what them off the top of my head, but I kind of mix it up. There's more techno, of course, on there, like there was traditionally on G15, some trance, dance music, and things like that. And I actually found some Creative Commons, I want to say they were from Denmark. It was actually a metal band, and I listened to a couple of their tracks, and I liked it. Okay. I don't know if you guys will, but it's pretty cool. So we got some new stuff on there.
You know, it just occurred to me that we've been doing Galaxy 15 long enough to say traditionally on Galaxy 15. That's scary.
Hell yeah!
So, but yeah, definitely check out the stream. I mean, I put the stream on all the time at work, especially when I have to code or something, because it's great background music for that. Of course, I Have Nothing every Saturday, Pure Decking every Tuesday and Thursday. Now we're adding Between the Sheets on Fridays, and BSV still has no clue when he's doing Nameless Review shows. So.
Whenever he feels like it.
So, of course, check out the Galaxy 15 Radio site, the galaxy15radio.com, the Twitter handle, at Galaxy 15 Radio. Use the feedback form, even if it's just to send us obscenities. That's, you know, it lets us know you're listening. So, absolutely, make use of the feedback form, especially if you've got more Creative Commons music that you'd like to hear on the station, send it to us so Sard can get on that. Sard gets the feedback as well, so if all you want to do is insult Sard, you can use the feedback form for that as well. So,
thank you. Thank you so much for that. Yep.
I thought you'd appreciate that.
Uh-huh.
So... And you can use the feedback form for other shows. Absolutely. I Have Nothing, Between the Sheets, Nameless Review, anything on that, we'll make sure the feedback gets to the right people. So absolutely use that form. Let's see. I think that's all I've got. Has anybody else got stuff they want to pimp?
That's it for me, man.
Yep.
Okay, well, I'm going to close this out with a little bit of Neville DeMar and call it a night. We'll be right back.